I'd like to call the Transportation Finance and Policy Division to order. Today we have a large number of bills, and we do have the room a little bit longer if they don't move. But we do need to get some bills moving. And I should announce at this point, we probably will have a meeting on Friday morning. We've got the room reserved from 8 to 12. So it's our intent to have the bill put together, and so I can give it to the minority prior to Thursday or Friday, somewhere in there, as soon as we can. And we'll probably have to move the bill on Friday if we don't do it on Thursday or sooner. Actually, we have some referrals and a subcommittee report to make before we take the agenda. And I'd like to move to refer House File 612, which we heard, Support Development Assistance Bill, to the Finance Division. Any questions or comments? Mm-hmm. It came from the Finance. We got to send it back to Finance. Not all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion prevails. And next, Representative Holberg, a subcommittee report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if I should make this motion, or does Representative Hornstein have to make the motion first to get it out of the subcommittee?
That's right. Excuse me. I thought you did. Representative Hornstein.
Fine if Representative Holberg wants to, but... I'll move House File 1376
Adopted.
Yeah.
As amended.
Yes.
Representative Hornstein moved House File 1376 as amended to adopt the subcommittee report. Any questions? This is Representative Holberg's bill. If not, all in favor say aye.
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 Contrary, no. The report is adopted. Now we have to move.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that House File 1376 be recommended to be re-referred to the Local Government Committee without recommendation.
Without recommendation?
Well, Mr. Chair, we're still working on a resolution, and rather than having the committee vote that it pass, as you and I discussed this morning, I'm going to meet with the townships and get this to Chair Hillstrom's committee, but I'll circle back with you prior to Chair Hillstrom's committee to assure you that we have Kumbaya or Peace in the Valley resolution to it.
I think it'll work out, yeah. Representative Holberg moved House File 1376 be recommended or to refer to the Local Government Committee without recommendations. Any questions? Not all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The referral is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The first bill up today is Representative Hornstein's House File 546, and this is one we started the other day, and frankly, we are limiting the time frame, so for all your testifiers and all of these bills, we're going to, if you don't finish, we're just going to lay the bill over, so you've got to move on some of these.
Thank you,
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I guess the first thing I would like to do is move the DE1 amendment.
Representative
Hornstein. And I'll explain that. H0546DE1 in your packets.
Is that in the packets?
Mr. Chair and members, while you're... Getting to that amendment, I wanted to mention that at the last hearing we did hear several concerns about the bill and made attempts to address those concerns without compromising the basic intent of the bill. And the one that we heard really from the most members, Mr. Chair.
Good morning, Steve. You moved the delete all amendment H0546DE1. And that's the way you want
that to will be on. The bill that we'll work off. That's thank the delete all amendment.
Representative Hornstein.
Mr. Chair and members, we did incorporate a number of the, you know, more common concerns. The one that was voiced the most often by the most members of the community, both the broader community as well as the committee, had to do with the 10% clause, which Ms. Blyle will refer to. We also incorporated some of the concerns that Representative Nelson had addressed. And so this bill, in most but not entirely, mirrors similar legislation that's moving in the Senate, also incorporated some of those amendments as well.
Representative Hornsky, I didn't call for a vote on or delete all amendments.
Okay.
As you were explaining it.
Sure. I'm done explaining it, so you can vote.
All in favor of the bringing the delete all amendment to the floor, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Okay, Representative Hornstein.
And
you should be aware, Representative Hornstein, we have a number of people that want to testify against the amendment.
And that's why I'm moving immediately to Ms. Weil.
Okay.
From Council 5 AFSCME. And that's I'm done with my presentation, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Fowle, yeah.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Julie Blyle, Legislative Director for AFSCME Council 5. Appreciate the time that you're spending here today on this bill. This bill has been significantly changed from the original bill that was before you a few weeks ago, and it requires reporting by the Department of Transportation. There are two sections of the bill. The first deals with contracts that are $25,000 or more. The second section deals with contracts that are $250,000 or more, and that's where we get into the cost estimate that needs to be determined by the department for the work supplies and the work done, and also that the contract is in the public interest. These reports come back to the legislature, are actually published in the register. It's our attempt to make sure that the work that we do, that the Department of Transportation employees, the work that the AFSCME members do, they have an opportunity to do that work and to maximize their skills within the department. I have three members here today that would like to just do 2 or 3 minutes each as examples with justification for the bill that's before you today. And if it's all right with you, I'd ask them to come down now. Tony Kilpala, John McGovern, and Bart Anderson.
Representative Holber.
And Mr. Chair, I don't know when you want to take questions, but I have a question on the DE1.
Representative Hornstein, you want to take those now or prior after the testimony?
I think let's do it now.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hornstein, when we heard testimony from the union representatives at the last hearing, they said they were happy to go to an apples-to-apples comparative analysis of the costs. And in looking at Subdivision 3, you only talk about the direct costs of having agencies employees and provide the work. And, of course, private contractors have both direct and indirect costs, that being overhead, lighting, computers. Why aren't you going apples to apples and having your contracting include all costs associated with providing this work?
I'll have thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Holberg. I'll have Ms. Blyle address that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Holberg, our attempt was to get at the cost.
Excuse me. Apparently, some of our members are having difficulty hearing. Ms. Blyle, will you pick your mic up, Lou? Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holberg, this was an attempt to get at the cost. Now, as we look at the work that we do, that's what we're trying to bring forward, as well as the work that the cost of the consulting contracts themselves. And it's my understanding that there have been attempts, legislation introduced that would literally classify the information from the private consulting contracts. And that information would not be public. This was our attempt to get at the work that we do and the contracts that are let or could be let for work that we do.
But Mr. Chair, could you please talk to the language on lines 119 and 120 and 121, in which you only delineate direct costs instead of total costs of providing the work? And again, private contractors, they don't just pay for the things listed on those lines. They have overhead, they have utilities, they have taxes that they pay. And by you limiting the bid of the AFSCME or union employees only to the direct costs, you are not having an apples-to-apples comparative analysis, if you will, and the testimony that I heard very loud and clear that in an apples-to-apples contracting situation, you believe that you win. And so I'm just trying to see language reflected in the bill that would make sure that that is the case.
Ms. Blyle?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Holbrook, this was our attempt to bring forward. Now, if you're believing that we are trying to create an apples-to-oranges comparison here, that is not our intent. And the costs that we have outlined are the costs of the employees at the Department of Transportation in the work that they do, which includes the supplies and the material, as well as their benefits. And, you know, I guess we could get into situations where we're going to specify everything and micromanage it down to a point where it would be virtually impossible to do all of the reporting. And I'm not sure that's what you're trying to get to, but this is our attempt to bring forward what we believe is a fair cost comparison.
Mr. Chairman, I think this can be accomplished really easily by deleting the word direct and just say all costs of having agency employees provide the work supplies or materials, including. In business, there's direct costs and there's indirect costs, and you are excluding all indirect costs by the language in your delete all amendment.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, if I just make one comment, I think what you may be referring to gets at that. The only concern I would have is with some of the agencies, as they have distributed indirect costs to programs, some of those programs have felt in the past, and I'm not referring specifically to the Department of Transportation, I'm looking at other agencies, the programs have felt that they have been unfairly harmed by those indirect costs because there's smaller programs within the agencies. And that would be my only concern, is when you have a smaller program and you're going to divide out indirect costs from the entire agency, that ends up being a detriment to a small program. But I do hear what you're saying.
Okay. Representative Hornstein, you?
No, I was just, thank you, Mr. I was just consulting with Ms. Blyle about.
Further question. I neglected to say, I think, to the committee, practically for all the bills that we're having, we're just going to lay over for possible inclusion. So if I didn't say that, I'm sorry. Any further questions? If not, would you bring your other witness or testifiers?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is John McGovern. I work out of District 1, DOT in Duluth.
Welcome to the committees.
In the matter of this bill, we're only asking for what we hired on to do without it being given away. We ask no more than what our job descriptions qualify us for and what we've been trained to do. We do design work, soil boring, surveys, inspections, a myriad of other tasks related to construction projects. We do prep work on state projects, but we do not physically build highways. This has been a misconception, I think, along the way here. It's not cost effective in our minds to pay consultants or private contractors on a for-profit basis when state workers are already in place and we have done the same work long before this new better way came along. An example would be a contract that was let not too long ago to a private company to do culvert inspection for the Department of Transportation. The state trained the private contractor. They used state equipment, GPS equipment. They were given locations of most of the culverts and provided with ID charts of sizes and types. The contractor totally missed 30% of them, misidentified about 40%, and couldn't find 25% of them, even with the locations. Major project that just recently was completed, the design work, the contractor had problems with the design, but told their people to turn it in anyway to MnDOT because they'd fix it. They still got paid for that work, so who loses on that deal? DOT employees have done the work in the past. We'd like to keep doing what we were hired to do. To pass this bill and make our administration accountable to the taxpayer and to their employees who have provided for the citizens and driving public in the past without the for-profit cost. Thank you.
Any questions to the testifier? No, thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bart Anderson. I'm a bridge maintenance worker and inspector, bridge inspector for the Metro Division of DOT. One of the recent examples of contracting out of our essential function of our job was some HSOP funding monies that were given to the department to basically bridge the gap in some maintenance activities we hadn't been able to get to in the past. And the first order of business was to contract out a number of our bridges to the city of Minneapolis and the city of St. Paul for bridge flushing. The concern we have with that is that when those contracts are let, there's very little accountability that goes with it. When my crew goes out and flushes a bridge, we inspect all the joints. We chain drag the bridge to find out if there's any delamination, and all those reports are sent to our central bridge office, and then disseminate the work from there. To the best of our knowledge, we haven't gotten any of those reports back to find out if any of the work that either of those cities have done was done to the specifications that we're expected to do it. The other concern we have is that when contracts are let to subcontractors, in an apples-to-apples comparison, our traffic control seems to be a big concern. We get a lot of calls to our dispatch about a lack of traffic control on certain contracts that go out. We have a set standard book that we go by for our traffic control setups, and we're held to that very strictly. But in these contracts that are let out, they're you know, to speak the language of the bill, the accountability isn't there, and we feel it's jeopardizing our jobs day after day. Thank you.
Representative Holbert.
Mr. Chair, Representative Leader, Mr. Chair, and the testifier talked about traffic control. Are the private contractors exempt from following those standards in your big book?
We believe they're supposed to follow the same standards that we do. There's a set book. I know personally of a few contractors that have that book. They know they need to abide by it, but there's a lack of checking up on them. Our folks check on us constantly to make sure ours are in place and where they need to be, but a contractor can slip by and not put out as many signs, not use as many sign trailers, not use as many cones. It can obviously keep the cost down.
And Mr. Chair, and sir, is it not the job of MnDOT to police the private contractors just as it is the MnDOT contractors for adherence to the standards for traffic control?
I would assume yes.
And so I guess, you know, I do you have any documentation of the number of citations for violations of traffic control for private contracts versus those done by MnDOT?
I can get you a report of there's a set code that our dispatchers use when our MnDOT employees come along a job that the contractor's doing and their traffic control isn't set up right. We call that into our dispatch, and they code that in a separate column, so to speak, and we can get a copy of that report.
And Mr. Chair, I would really appreciate that, because relative to this bill, we've heard a number of accusations regarding private contractors with no real substantial data to support them, and to the degree that the testifiers are able to provide the committee with facts and figures, if you will, rather than anecdotes, I think would be helpful to your cause.
Yeah. If you would.
Yep, we can get a copy of that report. I'll give it to Julie, and she can give it to the committee members.
Thank you, Mr.
That'd
Chair.
Be fine. Any further questions? No, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Tony Kelpla. I'm from DOT in Virginia, Minnesota. I'm local 1426 president.
And, Mr. Chair, we may not be data, but we do have a sample that you guys will send around.
Last summer, the members of my local performed a job for MnDOT. The original bid was let out at $250,000 for this safe lane project on one of our troublesome bridges up north. Our members did it at $95,000 total cost, 2.5 days ahead of schedule, with the compliments of the contractor, which is Cargill Corporation. And that's what I'm here for. I can provide those numbers if need them. I did not bring them with me, though.
What type of contract was that?
It's a bridge sealant. It's an epoxy with an aggregate base. It provides better traction on the bridge decks in the summertime, and in the wintertime it holds the salt and brine solution better, so the bridge deck doesn't ice up as much.
Any questions as a testifier?
What the members are looking at over there is a sample of the Safe Lane project. It's a two-layer course of aggregate and epoxy. It takes several days to put down on a bridge deck. We were scheduled for a six-day work week. We did it in roughly 2.5 days, 3 days total when we had to take down a lane closure.
Representative Mason?
Chair, can I ask clarification? Was this bid to a contractor, or you were just making the comparison of what you did versus what a private contractor would be expected to apply
this
for?
This is a comparison, Mr. Chair and members. This is a comparison from what the contractor would charge as to what the total cost for the MnDOT employees who were already in place in the area did.
Was there a question? If not, thank you.
Thank you.
That's the extent of your witness, Representative Horton, or testifier, isn't he?
We're done with our side.
We have.
We know there are others.
Well, Ms. Parker, I believe, too, is that right?
Well, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Betsy Parker from MnDOT. First of all, I'd like to say that with respect to that particular job, since it appears it was left up to MnDOT to decide what to do and we did the right thing, it strongly suggests that you don't need this bill. With respect to this bill, the last time this bill came up in this committee, I was here and I believe that I offered both to the author and to the union to meet with them to talk about working out issues related to the bill, and I made the same offer in the Senate and to the Senate offer, and no one has taken MnDOT up on that offer so far. So I would just like you to know that. We have two problems with the bill. One is that it is badly drafted and will undoubtedly lead to litigation over how it is to be interpreted, and the second is that it is extremely expensive and burdensome and will likely slow down the process of those MnDOT contracts that we do decide to do. It has
Parker, are you aware that it's a delete-all? Okay.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm aware of the delete-all. And I have a copy of it here that I got from up back. I will just tell you what MnDOT's concerns are about this. The bill is basically in two parts. The first part requires MnDOT to prepare for all contracts that are $25,000 or more, to prepare a comprehensive written estimate of the cost of the responder's proposal and a somewhat similar estimate of the cost of having MnDOT employees do the same work. And then it requires MnDOT to publish in the state register the summary of the cost of having MnDOT do the state work, but it doesn't require any publication of the cost to the contractor. Not that we want to publish either thing, because we have over 300 contracts a year that we think fall under this bill, which means we would need to make 300 publications a year in the state register. And we are estimating conservatively that that's probably, if it's, say, two pages at $144 a page in the state register, that's a cost of about $95,000 a year just for the state register publication. And there is no use provided or made of the information in the state register. Most people do not read the state register unless they are contractors who are looking for notice of state jobs or people reviewing state agency rules. Most citizens and taxpayers don't regularly read the state register. The second part of the bill requires that before MnDOT enters a contract for $250,000 or more, that we must determine that the cost to let the contract will be less than the cost to have MnDOT do the same work, that the quality of the contractor will equal or exceed the work by MnDOT employees, and that the contract is in the public interest, which, by the way, is not defined. In 2006, we had about 35 contracts in MnDOT that were over $250,000. And that would mean that we would have to make this kind of written determination for approximately that many number of contracts. There is a fiscal note on this bill that shows a cost of about $160,000, not including the cost to publish in the state register. So the total cost of complying this bill would be, with this bill would be about $250,000 a year, with no particular benefit shown to the public. Additional objections to this bill are that it usurps the right of the administration and the management of MnDOT to allocate and determine how to use MnDOT resources. And that is a very significant issue these days, because state agencies are always being urged to behave more like a business, to be responsible with the taxpayers' money, and to make the best possible decisions to get the most out of their resources. And that is a decision that is best made when there is a certain amount of freedom to determine how to allocate resources between contracting and doing work in-house. The bill also, although I understand that it does not include construction contracts, still has language that I believe could lead to arguments over whether or not it includes construction contracts, of which we have about 200 a year, municipal agreements with cities to do work, with which we have about 200 a year, and utility agreements, which also involve work incidental to construction on highways, as described in the bill, and we have 50 or 60 of those a year. So that's an additional 400 to 500 contracts a year that would arguably fall under this bill unless the bill is redrafted. Now, with respect to the cost comparison, there was some testimony about that. When MnDOT computes the cost of doing work, it uses a number of factors that are the same as those used by people in the private sector. We have a labor cost, which is basically wages. We have benefits, which includes things called out in the bill, such as the pension contribution and retirement. And then we have three things that are not included in this bill that are included in the calculations for private contractors. And those include overhead, which for MnDOT maintenance and construction activities averages about 20%. And that rate has been challenged and upheld in court. In addition, we have something called a labor additive at about 22%. And that is an amount we add to state work that the state pays for time not worked by state employees. That includes vacation, sick leave, holiday pay, and all other leave time. And you might be interested to know that amounts for this biennium to $128 million for MnDOT, payments for time not worked. So in order to have an accurate comparison between the cost of having work done in-house and the cost of having work done by private consultants, it is essential to have a comparison that compares the same things to each other. And MnDOT is fully capable of doing that kind of comparison of costs. We could do a calculation of an overhead rate for any work that MnDOT does, including design, which we admit is work that is being outsourced, some of which used to be done by employees who belong to AFSCME. We would be very happy to investigate and report back to you on what we learn about any of the complaints that were raised today about traffic issues, other contracts where contractors failed to perform. The department has a regular schedule of meet and confer with its bargaining units and tries to have the best possible relationship with unions, particularly when problems are brought forward. We do not want any of our employees, whether they're members of unions or not, to be in unsafe circumstances in MnDOT work zones or anywhere else. And so that is my testimony related to this bill.
Thank you. Are there questions from members of the committee? Representative Hornstein.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if this is appropriate at this time, but I do want to do a very short, simple oral amendment based on Ms. Parker's testimony. Would you rather me do this after all the testimony is completed or do it now?
Probably just as well. No, Mr. Hornstein.
Okay.
Representative
Hornstein. Well, I appreciate Ms. Parker's testimony and many of her points, and I guess on one, I will strongly agree with her on the publication in the State Register as somewhat onerous. And so what I would like to just do is on line 1.23 of the delete all and 1.24, simply delete and must be published in the State Register. I think we get, according to Ms. Parker, a $95,000 savings and make the bill at least somewhat less onerous for...
Representative Hornstein moved the oral amendment to delete on line 123 and must be, and on line 124, published in the State Register. Any discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion's adopted. Amendment's adopted. Or not the amendment, the motion. Apparently no questions, Ms. Parker, at this point. We have several other... Is there a Mr. Brown in the audience? And a Mr. Parker, both? Okay.
Mr. Chairman? Should I proceed?
Yes, if you'd welcome to the committee, sir.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Tom Parker, and Mr. Brown and myself represent the American Council of Engineering Companies of Minnesota, with over 50 Minnesota firms and 6,500 Minnesota employees. Our position on this bill is professional and technical services are fundamentally different from other types of contract services and should be exempted from the provisions of House File 546. And in support of that, we'll offer the following statements. MnDOT has a well-developed program in place for working with consulting engineers and providing oversight on consultant contract dollars. The consulting engineers that Rick and I represent are pre-qualified for MnDOT work. We bring special expertise that can be difficult for a state agency to maintain. We provide workload leveling for MnDOT. Professional and technical services are cyclical with peaks and valleys. And consulting engineers provide capacity to meet the peaks. And we simply basically go away during the valleys, and MnDOT staff takes care of that. Consulting engineers are not long-term cost commitments to the state. When the work is done, we are done. Consulting engineering services are priced efficiently. There's a lot of competition in our profession. As private businesses, we need to be efficient and cost competitive, or we'll be out of business. And finally, consulting engineers provide an essential part of the best value solution to Minnesota's needs. We would request that the committee consider deleting from lines 1.9 and 1.10 of the bill the words including but not limited to pre-design, design, and preliminary engineering. And we would request that the words and does not include services by persons licensed under 326.02 to 326.15 or the services provided by personnel under their direct supervision. And I have copy that language here.
Mr. Brown?
Mr. Chair, I have nothing specific to add.
Beg your pardon, sir?
I have nothing specific to add.
Are there questions for the member? If not, I'm sure the author will take this in consideration. We are laying this bill over. We're not voting on this bill, as you're aware. Did you have any further comment?
No. Thank you, Mr.
Chair. Appreciate your comment. Thank you, sir. Is there any other one individuals in the audience who wish to testify for or against this bill? If not, Representative Hornstein, do you want to summarize?
No, I know in the interest of time, I'll just thank you, Mr. Chair, and the committee for you know, the time you spent on this bill, and I think the constructive hearing we've had today. I just wanted to say that the engineers who just testified did meet with me. We had a very good discussion. I told them that I wanted to make sure I wanted to discuss this with AFSCME and the union representatives, and they do have some concerns. So I just wanted to again thank them for meeting with me, and at this point we can move forward with this, and I just really thank you and the committee.
Representative Holbert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hornstein, I don't know if you had enough time to think about moving the direct costs and that you have all costs in your comparative analysis with the private. And I know this is being laid over, but there's also, from my understanding, some fair accounting principles, cost analysis methodology, if you will, to determine costs of providing goods and services. So, I mean, I hope, and I know you're an honorable man, and I would hope that you would want this bill to move forward with an apples-to-apples comparative analysis.
Representative
Mr. Chair and Representative Fulberg, I will certainly discuss this with the bill sponsors, and you know, you made a suggestion last time that I think improved the bill, so we'll certainly take that into consideration.
Thank you. If there are no further questions, this bill will be laid over for further consideration for the omnibus finance bill.
Thank you, Representative Chair and members.
The next bill up is Representative Hornstein's also. Representative Holmes. The next bill up is House File 1714 by Representative Hornstein again. We could adopt the minutes. We do have a quorum. Would someone entertain a motion to adopt the minutes of who moved here? Well, Representative Mason moved to adopt the minutes of March 6th. Okay. Or March 8th. Representative Mahan moved to adopt the minutes of March 8th. Any comments or corrections? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The minutes are approved. Let's see.
Over here.
Representative Hornstein, are you ready to go?
Huh?
Yep.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 1714 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Transportation Finance Bill.
Okay. Do you have an amendment to delay on or anything?
Well, we have a few amendments, Mr. Chair. We're withdrawing the 0292 amendment.
I'm withdrawing that one?
Yes.
We don't have that one?
I haven't, Mr. Chair, really had a chance to see exactly what's in the various packets, but if there is a 0292, that would be withdrawn. But I would like
passed out right now.
Okay. Well, I guess people can just look at that for entertainment value.
Right. Forget about
okay. But there is a 0293 amendment that I'd like to move. I just want to be clear, if members don't have these amendments before them, maybe we could get through the public testimony and I could move them at a...
That's right. We don't have an amendment in the package.
Okay.
I see.
So let's do this then, Mr. Chairman. Just so you know, there are two amendments that we'll be moving, and Mr. Qualley will explain both of those in the course of his testimony. And I, with that, I would just we'll move the bill now and then move it as amended at after the testimony, if that's okay.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Qualley.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, representatives. My name is Philip Qualley. I'm State Legislative Director for the United Transportation Union, or UTU. I have over 25 years of experience as a railroad conductor, yard master, remote control locomotive operator, and a former Chicago Northwestern and Union Pacific Railroads. I'd like to point out that you do have a committee handout that is our introductory letter before you, I hope. Attached to that is a letter from the Federal Railroad Administration Deputy Administrator Joe Strang in support of the creation of a Minnesota State Rail Safety Inspector and the establishment of the inspector, which our bill calls for. We also have a copy of our legal department's opinion on the issue of federal preemption. We believe our bill can survive federal preemption. And then finally attached to that handout is a letter from the state of Wisconsin that is an example of how the state of Wisconsin funds three rail safety inspectors and a full-time attorney from an assessment as a percentage of revenue off intrastate rail in that state. Thank you for reviewing the materials, and we will have a PowerPoint, I believe, here that will be the same in the blue packet before you.
Mr. Qualley, are you explaining the bill, or are you testifying right now?
This
bill hasn't been explained. Are you coming into that?
I will explain the bill now.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Today, the UTU brings forward House File 1714, the Minnesota Railroad Safety Act, Walkway Safety Act. During the period between January 1st, 2003 and December 31st, 2006, we believe records and statistics show that 187 non-fatal railroad injuries occurred to rail workers in the state of Minnesota. From a study of U.S. Federal Railroad Administration statistics and from our own members' testimonials, 20% of these, or approximately 20% of these total injuries, can be considered and categorized as slip, trip, and fall injuries. Some will claim that these are behavioral. However, we find that with many of these injuries, contributing factors of uneven ballast, obstructions in the walkway, are the reasons. Where there have been carrier safety committees on the carrier properties to try to work with the carrier management to alleviate these problems. From my observation as state legislative director monitoring the committees, the carriers are simply not fixing up the hazards, and as we'll show shortly with one statistics. Moving to the bill, we would like to point out that in the first section, calls for the establishment of the State Rail Safety Inspector through the authority of the Commissioner of MnDOT, calls for an appropriation of $125,000 to cover the cost of the State Safety Inspector. It calls for the Commissioner to assess the Class 1 railroads after the first year to pay for the State Safety Inspector. The Commissioner may exempt short line railroads in the state, Class 2s and regionals, from being fined or penalized. And they can apply to the MnSharp type program that the Labor and Industry Department has for coaching rather than being assessed fines and penalties. It should be noticed that there will be appeal rights for aggrieved party in this matter, and that the Transportation Regulation Board of the state of Minnesota was abolished in 1996. And the administrative services from that abolishment transferred over to the Office of Administrative Hearings. So we feel that support administrative costs should be provided presently. We'll have to revisit that. And finally, we think that this bill gives the commissioner a great deal of flexibility and to create help improve rail safety in Minnesota. We believe that this legislation can save the carriers money due to less injuries. The cost of the inspector split between the four Class 1 railroads on a yearly basis is a fraction of the cost of one injury claim under our present compensation system. So we would hope that the railroads would see the positive nature of this. I'd like to move to some FRA injury statistics, and they're in the third page of your handout or above you if you can see it. We have a SOFA, or Switching Operations Fatality Analysis pyramid, and you'll see that the base of the pyramid is colored. That is where we part of where we come with our position that at least 20% are slip, trip, and falls. The next piece before you is an FRA statistics of slip, trip, and fall injuries broken down by types of events. And I'd like to move very quickly and just show you a few photos that we've compiled off the Canadian Pacific, Burlington Northern Santa Fe, Union Pacific, and Canadian National, and one short line railroad. Moving very quickly, we move to a bridge that has been reported for 3 years with bad bridge rails in an industry yard, has not been repaired. We move to a branch line where we see walkways that are deteriorating, where the brush is in the way, and it's our bill would alleviate that by creating a tow path along there and assuring that the brush is cut back. If we move, we can see where brush and steel is in a walkway, and that and we move to the next photo, and you can see.
If I might, are you calling the walkway this metal piece, or actually the is this what you're calling the walkway here?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, no. The walkways are on the ground. This, that happens to be a walkway on the side of a rail car. This bill looks to improve walkways that are on the earth next to the track.
I think, Mr. Qualley, I think the pictures are in a different order than what you had. It just happened. I think that's the one Representative Hoberg was seeing.
Well, I think I should go like this.
Yeah, maybe.
Oh, goodness, the technology. Pardon me, Mr. Chair and Representatives. Where are we? This is, I was trying to move quicker than the PowerPoint. I apologize, Representative, Mr. Chairman. If we can skip ahead a few here. And you see a man walking, you see brush down on a walkway and a branch line. In this photograph here, you can see that that brush, when it dries out in the autumn, is the size of a boot. And I want to point out respectfully, committee chair and representatives, that railroad workers work around the clock 24 hours a day and are walking in the dark with lanterns. If we could move to the next picture, please, we can see the branch line where they removed track but left the tripping hazards in place of ties. If we move to the next picture, you can see moving to a siding, another walkway area where they've just improved track and they've left litter and debris from the maintenance of way. If we look closer at some of the debris, we see a bag with tie plates and steel and spikes. Our bill proposes that those be cleaned up without exception. We move to a major classification industrial yard in Minneapolis, and as we look out over the yard, we see where a hump yard where they pull pins, and we see at the apex of the hill is a walking area. If we move to the next, we will see that where the man up on the hill or woman are pulling pins on those cars moving under their own momentum, you see a deteriorated grade, and this has been reported for over 2 years and not repaired. Moving to a yard, we see rotten grain. I'm sorry to tell you that there are conditions all over the state just like this. We have soybean, we have silica sand. As we walk down this track in the rail yard, we see that small triangle is a broken railroad tie with a tie butt that is elevated. That is a tripping hazard that someone hits any of these and you have a blown out cartilage, torn ligaments. As we move closer, you can see that this is what we deal with in terms of piles of feed. And I'd just like to say this is from underneath a car. A railroad worker has to put one leg between the rail to hang an air hose. You know, welcome to our world. Once our feet are in that, we have situations where our feet are slippery. And I also want to point out that those piles heat up in the summertime and give off fumes that are bad for our bronchial. I'd like to take you to another rail yard with the next photograph in Wilmer, where we see that waist-high weeds have not been cut. Moving to the next picture, I'd like to take you to a yard, a classification yard in northern Minnesota, where new ballast has come in. And instead of smoothing out the ballast, they have simply just left it in piles. That's the type of thing that our members get injured on, and we want to alleviate with this bill. We believe that it's in state's interest to create a safe workplace. And within the same yard in northern Minnesota, finally, we can see where they've taken track out but left the rail cutouts in. And just as a reminder, you'll see that in the wintertime, snow covers up all of these things. So it is a hazardous job, but we do believe that I'd like to move that we need to improve the safety. Moving very quickly to an FRA statistical chart on track analysis and safety inspections. It's notable to look at two areas that have been highlighted on track turnouts and main line and roadway turnouts, and these are specific areas that our bill seeks to address. But what's striking here, I want to direct your attention to the purple highlight of track records, a staggering 70.4% of the track records are under an FRA defect category just in the month of January and February of 2007 alone. Again, UTU submits to you respectfully that we need a state rail safety inspector, and we need this legislation to assure the safety of our members. Finally, I will just move to a diagram. Our bill seeks to not create walkway ballast provisions all over the entire railroad, but in specific areas where railroad workers work frequently parallel to and in between the track. And this diagram seeks to show that to you. It would assure a size of ballast in those areas that will reduce slipping and tripping. Our bill calls for that those areas to be assured to be smooth and free of obstructions and debris, steel, and other matter. Finally, moving here, I do want to speak that as state director, again, my job is to monitor the safety committees of the union. We don't see this as a labor management type thing. Safety is not a collective bargaining thing, and I do want to demonstrate to you a chart off of one Class 1 Railroad Safety Committee where 70% of the total listed items are physical plant related, and yet if you look at the far right-hand column in red, you'll see that a large percent are still not completed and fixed 90 days after the reporting. We don't consider that acceptable, and the safety committees just aren't working. The carriers are not cleaning things up as they should. In closing, we believe that this the question in the railroading is always, does the state have a right to regulate something, an industry that is generally federally regulated? We believe that this legislation can survive the test of federal preemption. This law, the language has been drafted from the state of Nevada, which is a derivative of the state of California, and in the California, Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, those laws did survive a federal preemption challenge from the railroads. Last picture here I would simply like to pose to you is this is what we're going for. This is a good railroad right-of-way out on the main line. This is continuous welded rail track. When you see 11-inch ballast shoulder level with the end of the ties, you see a 45-degree drop-off of ballast that is assured to hold the stress of the rail in place. But on the far outside, you see a walkway path that is clear of debris, reasonably clear of debris, and our bill calls for in the specific locations. This is what we're going for safe railroads in Minnesota. I want to thank you, the committee chair and representatives. We believe it's in state's interest to protect workers' safety. I believe it's in public interest to protect workers' safety. We're controlling movements of hazardous material. The FRA supports the creation of a state safety inspector. And finally, the railroads are in their third year of record profits. 25 years ago, the railroad workers contributed to the creation of the Staggers Act, where the railroad industry was deregulated. We've returned, we're a healthy industry, we're in our third year of record profits, and I call for this bill to be passed into law. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Frawley, you mentioned the MSHAR program. Is your goal here to set up a program similar to that where we're not fining them, but we're allowing OSHA to come out, or the inspectors to come out like they do in the MSHAR program with OSHA inspectors, and they consult with the owners, they consult with in the building industry, what they do is they come out and they consult with the owners and the contractors, and as they walk through, if they find things wrong, if they correct them right away, they don't get fined, and it's a way to clean up the industry without resulting in or having to go to fines. Is that what your intention is here?
Mr. Crowley?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, yes, it is. And I'd also like to point out that in the construction of this bill, while we would hopefully be enacted in 2007, we give a year's lead time before any fines would be levied against Class 1s. So we do see for the Class 1s penalties, but we give a one-year lead time, financial penalties. But both could apply to the MnSHAR, the short lines can apply to the MnSHAR program, and we'd certainly be amenable to the Class 1s applying to the MnSHAR program as well. Thank you.
Representative Nelson.
It's like I said, the MnSHAR program, it's also called OSHA consultation. It's worked well in the construction industry. The big jobs, they go out and they inspect, and it's cut down on injuries, it's cut down on lost time, and it's what we all want, and the contractors that sign up and go along with this agree to fix the problems that are found with us, and because of that, they don't get fined by OSHA, and therefore, everybody wins. The contractor wins, they have a safer workplace, the workers win because they're not getting injured, and again, the contractor wins because they're not losing time to people on workers' compensation. So it's a good program all the way along that I think we should support this.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mason.
Can I just ask one question regarding this picture? Are these rails usable? Can the railroads actually go on them with all that debris on them?
Mr. Crowley?
Yes. What you have there is ballast on the rail, and the ballast, the flank wheel and the wheel of the car will cut right over that. Okay. And you have to move slowly. And once that is the case, once the car has first cut the flange on the rail, yes. I think the key to this picture is that we have this situation where they dump ballast to stabilize track and then leave it all over the state. And thank you very much, Matt, Mr. Chairman and Representative. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you.
Representative Holberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering, who's doing the inspections that resulted in this report?
The Federal Railroad Administration.
And Mr. Chair, then why can't they help with this issue if they're doing these reports? And
Mr. Qualley.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, thank you for your question. I have to say that a great deal of my job is working with the FRA. The FRA is doing the very, very best they can with their manpower and resources that they have available to them. Deputy Administrator Strang says in her letter that's before you, 30 states have rail state safety inspectors, and the FRA considers the partnership between state rail safety inspectors and the federal railroad inspectors an integral part of their overall comprehensive safety program. Minnesota had two state safety inspectors until 1985 when they were abolished. And finally, I'd like to point out in the letter, I believe it's highlighted before you, the work that is being done by a federal state, committee chairman, representative, let me rephrase this. The inspections that would be performed by a state inspector are not duplicative of the Federal Railroad Administration's inspections. In other words, if you were to create a state safety inspector, they're not going to be picking up the work the federal would be doing. There will be a net improvement of that inspector's 100% of their time.
Okay. Representative Holbert?
If I might, then who generated this report?
That was developed from a Class 1 railroad, which I have chosen as state director to keep anonymous, but as a Class 1 railroad with a safety committee operating in the state, and that was sent to me by the safety coordinator, who is my assistant and coordinates with that program. That was generated by the carrier.
And if I might, you talked about the percentage of open cases after 90 days of being 30%, but if you look, in fact, at the first column, there's almost 1,800 issues logged, and of all those issues logged, only 167 issues were open issues, 1,600 were closed, and so I think the percent of the total issues that are open would be closer to about less than 2%.
Mr. Qualley.
Thank you very much, Committee Chairman, Representative. I do not, in answering your question, I do not have a clear answer. However, as I understand this safety committee report, the issues logged as a total. Over the period of time that those have been submitted and logged, I do not know when that period of time began. I think the relevant number starts with the 167, and it is broken down as open items. Items that are open, you can see that between 0 and 30 days is 38.32%, which we understand is reasonable. They're in the process of being fixed. But as we go to items open 31 to 60, we get the 28.4. Open 61 to 90 days, we're at 3.5. But over 90 days, which are may be large capital projects, so we respect that, are 29.94.
Well, and Mr. Chair, it also would probably depend on what time of the year these issues were logged. There's certainly things that just can't be done in January and February in Minnesota.
Mr. Qualley.
Thank you, Committee Chairman and Representative. Very clearly, that's true, but we do gauge for that in our planning and the expectations set forth in the maintenance of way department's schedules. I'd also like to point out that the carrier has a non-delegable duty to improve these items to protect the safety of the workers. I will spare you stories out of the blizzard that hit Duluth and Wilmer in the last 2 weeks and what happened in those situations. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And Mr. Chair, the Pittsburgh referenced a letter and a packet of information a couple times, and maybe I'm just not good at looking for stuff, but I don't believe that we had those in our packet.
I guess we, Mr. Qualley, apparently we don't, most members don't have that for some reason. Apparently we were short or failed to get it in some of the packets. She has it now or they have it now. They got it.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize. They were delivered to the...
They've got it.
Okay, thank you very much.
There's got some pages put it in and they had to really get stuff in a hurry, so they got it in there.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any further questions? If not, thank you, Mr. Qualley. Representative Hornstein, are there any testifiers other in support of the bill?
Not from the union, United Transportation Union, no, Committee Chairman.
Thank you.
I know there's, Mr. Chair, several opponents possibly.
Are there other testifiers in the audience that want to testify against the bill? For or against the bill? Oh, okay, that's right, we have some. I didn't look at my agenda. We have, we'll take that other guy first. Johnny.
Good afternoon, Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Brian Sweeney. I'm Legislative Counsel for BNSF Railway in St. Paul. We're here in opposition to the bill, but basically our position is that this bill is premature. This is an issue that we believe really needs to be studied, needs to be looked into to see exactly what the problem is and what an appropriate solution to whatever the problem is. My company, BNSF Railway, is roughly one half to one third of the total railroad presence in the United States. And we have not had a significant number of slip, trip, and fall injuries over the past 3 years affecting the areas that would be addressed by this legislation. Year 2004 in this area, and I'm not talking about just injuries that reach a threshold where they have to be reported to the Federal Railroad Administration. I'm including all injuries that we hear about if they include something like basic first aid, cuts and abrasions, what have you. 2004, we had 7 of these. In 2005, there were 6. And in 2006, there were 5. So a total of 18 injuries involving slip, trip, and fall in these areas adjacent to the track. So I think we need to look at what exactly is the scope of this problem that's being addressed with this very broad, detailed, expensive piece of legislation. Roughly a half to two-thirds of our slip, trip, and fall injuries occur in locations other than the track. So it's... Is the case being made that this is an inherently dangerous location that needs new state regulation and so on? Some of these injuries that we did have likely happened in areas that would pass muster under this legislation. We don't know the details. It was somebody walking backwards. What happened? What were the circumstances of the injury? Instead, we're being asked to make a blanket assumption that every slip, trip, and fall injury would be prevented by this legislation, whether it be by having these specific walkway requirements in place or a state inspector. Is this a reasonable approach to whatever the scope of the problem is? The amendments that have that we have seen would require my company to probably do a couple hundred miles of walkways over the next year or so, because it would require 2 miles either side of inspection points. In the track, we have what are called dragging equipment detectors. These are sensors that detect problems with trains. They report to the train crew there is a problem. They stop the train and walk the train looking for the problem. We have these roughly every 30 miles or so. So we're looking at maybe a couple hundred miles of walkways that might have to be either constructed or adapted to the specific requirements of this legislation. The amendments also talk about existing track would be exempted until such time as the structure is repaired. What does that mean? Is that replacing a few spikes? Is it replacing a couple of cross ties? What does repaired mean? That would take some of our 1,600 miles of track in the state of Minnesota out of the exempt category and suddenly put us under this requirement. So there's a lot of work that would have to be done in that area. We're looking at a cost if we have to construct new walkways. I talked to somebody in our engineering department last week. Depending on the condition of the area around the track right now, if we had to build it new, it could cost as much as $75,000 per mile to construct new walkways adjacent to the track. If we have to go in and do grading work and so on, that would be the expensive end. So if this could potentially be a very, very expensive solution to a problem that, you know, as I said, in my company, we had 18 such total injuries, many of which required something on the line of, you know, Bactine and Band-Aids for medical treatment. The inspector position that's in this bill, this is... I think there needs to be some work done on what would this person be doing. What is the nature of this job? When you look at the bill, this person would be responsible for all kinds of other things, it looks like getting into homeland security issues that are covered by other departments in the state, handled by the federal government, handled by county emergency responders. So I think we need to look at, is this job really necessary? Is this crafted properly? One thing that should be noted is the fines that would be collected for enforcing Federal Railroad Administration regulations would not be kept by the state. That money would go, those fines would be collected by the federal government, not the state. Point of clarification, while the there is a letter there talking about how Wisconsin finances the Office of the Railroad Commissioner and their inspectors, they do not do the FRA inspections that are talked about here. These are people who work primarily on grade crossing installations and inspections and safety. They don't do track inspections. The Federal Railroad Administration has 9 inspectors based at Fort Snelling to cover Minnesota and Wisconsin. So there are some federal inspectors here. So, again, it's what is the need. I think that all of this needs to be looked at. We think that that what should happen is that this bill should be held over and the parties try to work something out that, number one, takes a look at what is the real situation, what needs to be done, and what's a practical solution. This is an approach that the railroad industry adopted in Illinois a couple years ago. We worked with the Illinois Commerce Commission. We worked with the United Transportation Union and came in with agreed-upon language. Now, a couple of railroads who were not part of that agreement have challenged it in court. We don't know what's going to happen with that. But this is something that my company and the others represented here today have taken part in and believe is the right way to approach this. First of all, what is the magnitude of the problem? Secondly, what's a practical, reasonable solution to it? Given the numbers of injuries that we're finding here, in the amendments that we have seen for this bill, we have various problems. For example, the right of way is supposed to be kept free of rocks. Well, the ballast that the track rests upon is rocks. That's just one problem. But then the liability language is astonishing, that that this would present an absolute liability situation on us for any failure to this is just beyond the beyonds with the liability language. We have problems with the notion that let's see, looking through these, the walkway exemptions, again, that these rules would not apply until a structure is repaired. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean when we replace a few spikes? What is the triggering event that would suddenly force us to have to put in these walkway surfaces and so on? So there's a lot of work that needs to be done to clarify, number one, how big is the problem, in fact? And what's a reasonable, practical solution to it, assuming one is necessary?
Mr. Chair, if I might. Yeah. Just a point of clarification first. Maybe it's for Mr. Qualley, then I'm going to have a question for Mr. Sweeney. Mr. Qualley, Representative Earhart and I are both, I think, following up on a question that Representative Fulberg asked earlier. What exactly is the walkway? What is the width? What is the area that we're talking about here when we talk about walkways? Mr. Qualley.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it is from the center line of track, it is 8 feet, 6 inches to the outside. And it's within the standard statute clearance area. So I hope that answers your question, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much.
And then, Mr. Chair, if I may, I have a question for Mr. Sweeney. Mr. Sweeney, I hear and I take with great consideration a number of the concerns you raised. I, too, was wondering about rocks, for example. But I turn to Illinois now having 6 state inspectors, and you mentioned that was in part the result of talking with at least a number of the rail companies in Illinois. Do I understand that correctly?
The hiring of inspectors or the property standards?
Well, maybe I should ask you. You said that there was an arrangement, a compromise consensus reached with the rail companies in Illinois, yet 2 of the companies, if I understood correctly, did not agree and they're challenging it in court. What is the it that they're challenging then?
Mr. Chair, Representative, they're challenging whether or not there's federal preemption, as I understand, federal preemption of the regulations as a whole.
What did the other companies agree to then, if I may ask, Mr. Sweeney?
The other companies, including mine, agreed to, basically a set of rules that would address future construction. That had a provision to go back if a dangerous situation was detected to set up a process whereby that could be dealt with. And had, you know, certain locations that walkways that this applied to.
Thank
not
you.
As broad as what is here. For example, this gets into bridges, which is a wholly separate area, and there is federal preemption of that area.
Oh, and Mr. Sweeney, please, I do understand that. I appreciate that there may be work that needs to be done here. Did the Illinois agreement...
Mr. Chair, Representative, the inspectors, state of Illinois already has inspectors working through the Illinois Commerce Commission.
So then, if I just may follow up my thoughts so that I'm clear, it is at least possible then that your client may come to an agreement on a system of state inspectors and walkways in Minnesota somewhat similar to what may have occurred in Illinois.
Mr. Chair, Representative, it's possible, yes. I mean, our position is that this is this is an area that is just boom, here it is, without any determination of what exactly is the magnitude of the problem, where is the problem, and what is a good practical, reasonable solution to the problem, whatever that might be.
So you're not rejecting out of hand a state inspector.
Representative Morrow.
Yes.
Please, to the chair.
Yes, I'm sorry.
Okay. Do you have other questions?
No, I just wanted to clarify to make sure I understand. Yep. Thank you.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to just clarify some of the letters we have. One that comes from the U.S. Department of Transportation, the Federal Railroad Administration, that seems to be supporting the bill, supports state participation. Currently, states employ 165 rail safety inspectors. Down at the bottom, state participation is a critical component of the current National Railroad Safety Assurance.
If I may interrupt, we're probably having two different testifiers. We actually don't have Representative or Mr. Qualley at the testifying. Oh. That's probably his question. Is that correct?
Well, actually, no, to the testifier. Because he seemed to suggest maybe we were, that this was something out of the ordinary and extreme and hurried. But when I read this letter, it certainly seems as though they encourage it, that there are fairly large numbers across the country. And you referenced the state of Wisconsin letter. But the staff consists, among other things, of three investigators. So the letters we have seem to suggest this is not an unusual circumstance in states.
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, I would not at all say it's unusual. The Wisconsin situation is not a parallel to this, was my point with the Wisconsin letter. Wisconsin, the Office of the Commissioner of Railroads, is involved predominantly in such things as grade crossing closures, installation of grade crossing signals, types of things that are generally handled by the Minnesota Department of Transportation. They do not have full-fledged FRA-certified rail safety inspectors performing those types of inspections.
And then just the letter from the Federal Railroad Administration that seems quite supportive of the letter.
Yes, Representative, they are supportive of consideration of the concept, yes. No. Mr.
Any further? Representative Mason, you have another question? Representative Mason?
Mr. Chair, sir, I have a question. Do you have railroads that run in Nevada and California?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, we do.
Okay.
And my company operates in California. We have trackage rights over another railroad in the state of Nevada.
And if I remember correctly, they said this bill was drafted after Nevada's. So if that's true, wouldn't you already have familiarity with what's in here already and experience?
Mr. Chair, Representative, some, but not a whole lot. It's being amended as we speak. We first got a portion of this bill. Was it every other page because of printing problems with the snowstorm last week? So our whole point was that we should have an opportunity to take a look at what is the situation in Minnesota and what's a reasonable practical solution to whatever that problem might be. Now, as for what was introduced in Nevada and California, that was... I'm not sure. Not having read that, I can't say how closely it tracks with this.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions? No, thank you, Mr. Sweeney. Mr. Aperts, do you have a comment too? I have to remind the committee we didn't give this much time to either one of these two bills. We have a lot of bills, and these bills are going to be laid over. But we have to recognize there may be other testimony too yet. So, Mr. Aperts?
Mr. Chairman, I think that was a message. I'm quick. I'm real quick. Mr. Chairman, my name is John Appitz. I'm with the law firm of Messerly & Kramer, and I represent the Minnesota Regional Railroads Association. Good to see you all again.
think you saw sitting here a couple of weeks ago trying to explain railroads a bit. Just looking in your eyes, I think I understand exactly what you're saying, Mr. Chairman, but if I might suggest, you haven't even gone through this bill section by section. It is very technical. It contains a lot of minutiae, a lot of stuff, but if you're going to pass something like this and impose it on an industry in this state, you may want to figure out what it is you're going through. A lot of pictures of gruesome scenes are not the substance of which you should be making laws, I would suggest, respectfully. That all said, we saw the bill about a week ago, and so we've been working through it ever since. The question I think that was being presented by Mr. Sweeney here is the question of the propensity of the size of the issue that you've got to deal with. We said 20% of 187 incidences, looking at the chart that was presented. That's over 4 years, and that comes down to about less than 10 a year, 8, 9, 10 incidences a year. And I think they included such things as walking, let's see, there's getting off, slip, fell, stumble, stepping down, stepping on some ballast, slipping and walking. That's all the slip and falls. I did a quick review of the railroads that I represent, short line railroads, and asked them to get me information. And this was like on Tuesday, and so I didn't get stuff from everybody. But I did get a sense of the numbers that relate to short lines and regional railroads here in the state, as well as, let me be very clear, the Union Pacific, which is one of my railroads, and the Canadian National, which is also one of the railroads that I represent. But you got to take it in context. For instance, let's take a look at Progressive Rail, which is down in the Farmington area. They report back, Patrick, we had one slip, trip, and fall over these years. It was a signal maintainer who slipped in a patch of ice in the middle of the Lone Oak Road while doing a monthly test on crossing signals. The UP reported back that they had four incidences in 4 years. This is one of the larger railroads that operates in the state of Minnesota. Canadian National had two in 03, four in 04, three in 05, one in 06. Four of them were weather-related slip and falls on snowy or icy conditions. That's not what this bill deals with. We're not trying to change the weather conditions. This deals with the question that you all asked about walkways. I wanted to bring that out because I think it's significant. I have a page. I think it's significant to understand that. Oh, pardon me. That railroads do care about safety, and it's being portrayed here as though perhaps we don't. We do care about safety, and railroads themselves have perhaps one of the lowest have the lowest employment injury rate of all the modes of transportation. Just take a look at that from the Bureau of Statistics. They have rates that are lower than most major industry groups, including agriculture, including construction, Representative Nelson, manufacturing and private industry as a whole. And I think that's a consequence in terms of the context of this issue. Why don't you just have that chart so you can see kind of where we fall and the kind of issue that we're dealing with. To Representative Nelson's question very quickly, you referenced the MnSHARP program, I believe it was. There is provision made in the bill. It's lines 2.25 to 2.29. You want to take a quick look at the bill, which provides that the Commissioner of Transportation can exempt a common carrier that's a short line or a regional. Can't exempt this guy, but can exempt a short line or a regional common carrier from fines for a period up to 2 years if they determine that going through the MnSHARP program administered by the Department of Labor and Industry would be a preferred approach to all of this. You're suggesting it perhaps would be. I'm not suggesting it's not. I'm only saying it doesn't cover most of the trackage and most of the railroads that are involved here in the state. And I'm not sure with the amendments that Mr. Sweeney was referencing, you're going to be covering a lot of the pictures that you saw on the overhead here. There was a lot of sections. I think the amendments are going to try to deal with areas that you would inspect upon and areas within automated inspection areas where you would have a signal that would go off. The train would have to stop. You'd get out and take a look. I'll let Mr. Qualley explain how that's going to work. But I could go on and on. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate your admonition. Suffice it to say, I think it needs to be looked at. And if I think instead of popping a bill on you and us and everybody else a week ago and thinking we're going to bring this all into play, maybe we should sit down and talk about this first. Maybe you should ask the department what they think about it, too, because we should like...
Ms. Rapitz, that's the next testifier.
Thank you, sir.
We've given about quality time to board, and we have to cut this off. Understood, and this is a question for Mr. Rapitz. I'd like to call in Mr. Selman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I think we balanced the pros and cons pretty well, and we're probably not going to have any further testimony either from Mr. Qualley. We'll take with him and with Mr. Selmes, Mr. Qualley.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Cecil Selmes. I'm the director of the Office of Railroads and Waterway Freight and Commercial Vehicle Operations for MnDOT. MnDOT opposes this bill, and I think a lot of the concerns that have been raised we share. The bill came to us fairly recently. We really haven't had a chance to look into it and to identify the extent of the issues that this bill would address, would propose to address on an independent basis. Quite frankly, we have not been involved in any discussions or awareness of particular issues within the state of this nature, and that may be because we're not actively inspecting track, but so we need to know more about that. We do work with our other state fellow state implementers of rail programs and safety. This has not been a burgeoning issue at a national level, so we've not heard a lot of concern from our fellow states. I think it may be part of their ongoing activities. About half the states do have state programs where they participate in implementing the Federal Railroad Administration's rail safety rules. The letter that Mr. Qualley provided from the Federal Railroad Administration does support the states being involved in their track and other safety program. It's a fairly broad program that we did participate in the early 80s, but that program was partially funded by federal funds. It was a 50-50 match, and when they quit that part of the program, one of our inspectors retired. We put another inspector to work managing our rail crossing safety program and our rail service improvement program, so that we do not continue to participate in that federal program. There is reference in our state statutes to issues of concern about safety on the railroad that a complaint can be filed with the Commissioner of Transportation, and the Commissioner can do hold a hearing and do a finding and issue an order. To my knowledge, that law has not been used. And so I don't know if that's an appropriate alternative within existing law. And also, as you've heard, the federal program does cover a wide variety of safety issues on the railroad, including, I believe, this concern. And there is federal inspectors within the state.
Thank you, Mr. Salmas. Any questions? If not, we just could have a summary statement from Representative Hornstein. And I'd like to also, the committee, we haven't voted on the amendment as was adopted and discussed. Is there any questions on the amendment of, which one have you got there? You had one.
There's two of them, Mr. Chair.
293, is that the one you had?
So I'd like to move the A07-0293 amendment.
That's the one, basically.
Walkway exemptions.
Any further discussion? Not all in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. The amendment is adopted.
Okay. You, yeah. Just 1 second, Mr. Chair.
We're going to delete on the liability line 2.7.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A07-0297 amendment and then add a pretty straightforward oral amendment to that.
Okay. What's the oral amendment?
Delete under Section 15. Delete everything after line 2.7 walkway. So you would delete... Section 15 would only read... Nothing in this chapter precludes or preempts civil liability to an injured party under state or federal laws for failure to provide a reasonably safe walkway, period. And then everything else is taken out. That would be including the on line 2.7 and then everything after 2.8.
We'll incorporate that in that amendment. We've actually had a lot of discussion on the amendment before it was here. Is there any...
Okay.
You have another oral amendment?
One last one, Mr. Chair. This is a tough one for me because I'm a rocker, but on line 1.10, delete the word rocks.
Rocks. You know, the author has the amendment in the shape he wants it, I believe, and we've discussed it pretty thoroughly as I look at the amendment.
And I will just ask Mr. Pauly, and I've really instructed him to be very, very brief. I think he just wanted to make a couple of closing comments related to
would
the
would you move this amendment to?
Yes, moving A070297.
All in favor of the motion to move amendment A0297, say aye.
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 Contrary, no. The amendment is adopted.
And he very, a minute or less, Mr. Chairman.
We have really exceeded our time.
Okay.
Well, Chairman, committee members, thank you very much. The carrier's comments, friends of mine, I respect very much. I disagree with their characterizations of the movement of this legislation and development of the legislation. Finally, I think I see about 8 items that they have spoken to that I disagree with. The injuries are occurring now, and regarding the issue of more study, I respectfully disagree. The working safety groups on the carrier properties have been studying this and trying to improve it for years, and we're not getting the improvement. Thank you very much. And regarding the Wisconsin item, the question, there are 30 state rail safety inspectors nationwide. 28 apply to the FRA partnership program. Wisconsin is not one of them, and Wisconsin, as well as our bill, would have the ability to inspect track. Committees, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We won't get any rebuttal, but I think Representative Hornstein will take a look at this, everything you've learned.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair members. Really appreciate your patience.
This bill will be laid over for
possible inclusion in the transportation finance. But, Mr. Chair, there might be some other committees. We'll talk to the chairs about those.
Okay. Here we go. Representative Morrill has the bill.
We're going to set a land speed record here, Chairman.
Okay.
Mr. Yep. Chair, I would move House File 1772 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Representative Morrow.
Mr. Chair, there is members have before them an A1 amendment to this bill. It may be, perhaps it's coming around now, I can't tell.
Yeah.
This amendment would strike the words through June on line 1.6 and strike 30, 2008 in line 1.7 and insert from July 1st, 2008 through June 30th, 2012.
We have that amendment, Representative Morrow. Do you move the amendment?
I do move the amendment.
All in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to move to Mr. Kellen of the Minnesota Public Transit Association to briefly describe what this bill is about.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Kellen.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this bill models the language that was adopted by the legislature in 2003 in the Omnibus Transportation Bill and included $5 million in federal flexible transit funds for Greater Minnesota. That was allocated over a 5-year period from 2004 to 2008 at $1 million per year. These funds have been used to purchase transit vehicles and also assisted with the construction of a portion of the Moorhead Transit garage facility. I've sent around a handout that is a listing of all of the primarily vehicles that have been purchased with these flexible federal funds. There's been over 40 buses purchased since 2004. 25 of those buses are in service, 9 are on order, and 7 are obligated for 2008. This is a vital program, and I'm just here as president, and I should have probably introduced myself. I'm president of the Minnesota Public Transit Association, representing the metro area in greater Minnesota, and we strongly support the continuation of this very successful program.
Mr. Keller, is this a continuation? Like you said, this wasn't vetoed in the last transportation bill, was it?
No, this is a continuation of the bill from 2003.
Any questions of Mr. Keller or the author? If not, I think we're in good shape. Representative Morrill renews his motion that House Files, what is it, 1772, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus finance bill. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Keller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Listen. Oh, Earhart. I got to take some. I stopped with you.
Yeah. I'm taking lots of.
Representative Wheeler is going to work on House File 1635.
Okay. I'd like to move House File 1635. Mr. Chair?
Thank you. Go ahead.
I do have one small minor amendment. It's 1635A1.
Any discussion on 35A1?
Right. I'd like to move that amendment.
All in favor of 35A1, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Actually, what it... No.
Adopted?
Actually, what it does is it just deletes the word either. That was a little problem in there. So that takes care of that one. Mr. Chair and members, this bill deals with the... what does it deal with? Creating a highway safety improvement account. And I have Ms. Lovro from the Association of Minnesota Counties testify.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Carol Lovro with the Association of Counties. This issue was brought to us by the Minnesota County Engineers and presented to our AMC Policy Committee and adopted by the committee and by the full membership at the General Assembly at our annual meeting. And I'll turn it over to Greg Isaacson, who is the county engineer from Goodhue County and past president of the county engineers.
Welcome.
Good afternoon. As Carol mentioned, my name is Greg Isaacson. I'm a Goodhue County engineer, and I'm a past president of the County Engineers Association. This House File 1635 creates a safety improvement account within the flexible highway account, which is part of the special 5% distribution account, which is part of the highway users tax distribution fund. Now, the highway users tax distribution fund is the fund where all the gas tax dollars, vehicle license tab fees, and the MVES fees go into. The special 5% distribution fund and other administrative funds are taken off of the top of these monies before it's split up between 62% going to the state of Minnesota, 29% going to the counties, and the 9% going to the major cities. The special 5% account that comes off of the top before the distribution funds three programs. One of them is the Town Road Program, Town Bridge Program, and this Flexible Highway Account. And it's this Flexible Highway Account that I'm getting down to. This Flexible Highway Account is currently used for funding projects where highways need improvements that were MnDOT highways and are being turned back to either the counties or the cities. And the rest of the money is used for construction projects on the state trunk highway system. This new safety account account fits well into this flexible account because it's currently used on the state highway system, the county system, and the street system. And this new safety account that this bill sets up could also be used on those same three road systems. As written, this bill still gives the Commissioner of Transportation the duty to determine how much of the flexible account would actually be set aside within the safety improvement portion of the account. The bill at this point does not put any money into the account. It simply sets it up so that it can exist. Now, why do we at the county level support a bill like this? Safety on our highways is a major concern for the county engineers. The economic loss due to traffic accidents in Minnesota is averaging about $1.5 billion a year. The last federal highway bill is called Safety Lou, and the S in the word Safety Lou stands for safety. The federal government is looking for the states to make some major safety improvements on the system as a whole, specifically looking to make improvements where the crashes are occurring. And they've recommended that the state of Minnesota spend somewhere around $20 million a year on such a program. Transportation funds at the local level, at the county level, are short. In fact, this year, local counties plan to spend somewhere around or over $60 million of local money trying to improve their road system. And it's awfully difficult to be trying to compete safety projects versus projects that are rebuilding our system as a whole. MnDOT recently solicited the counties asking for specific safety projects to use some federal money through the Comprehensive Highway Safety Program. Now, these are federal funds, and these funds, we don't know if they're going to be around on an annual consistent basis or not. But when MnDOT asked the counties if they have any specific safety projects, counties submitted more than $5.5 million worth of projects. Of those, funding was supplied to $3.4 million worth of those projects, leaving well over $1 million of unfunded specific safety projects out there. Okay. All right. So with that, we at the county level think that safety program could be very useful, and it's something we really should try to do to try to make our highways safer for the traveling public who utilizes the roads. Thank you.
I just have a question. How much does that 5% amount to? I mean, on a general rule, is it?
I can tell you from a couple of years ago, from 2002 dollars, that special 5% was around $63 million.
Okay. Any other questions or any other testifiers? Anything else? Okay, well, we'll write this over for possible inclusion in the honor of this tax bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, if I don't have my House File 1636 here, if I get a copy of that one.
It's 735.
I don't know which bill you got coming up next, Mr. Chair.
I got 735 right here.
Okay.
Is that, that's yours.
Yes. I'd like to move House File 1735, and I also have an amendment, small amendment for that one, Mr. Chair.
All right. Representative Leader moves Amendment H.O. 735A1, 735 bill. Any discussion on the amendment? If not, y'all can read it there, and all those in favor of the amendment, please hit me by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. 35A1 is adopted. And so we now have the bill in the situation that the author would like. Please proceed, Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, this is a department bill that deals with authorizing access to sometimes property that the state doesn't have, where they have to go and do what they call geotechnical drilling. They actually do soil borings, and that's one of the issues. And I have Ms. Parker from the department to testify.
Ms. Parker.
For Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Betsy Parker from MnDOT. This is a MnDOT agency bill. As far as I know, there's no controversy associated with it or any opposition, and I'll be brief with the explanation. Section 1 would authorize the department to go on people's private property to do geotechnical investigations, which is basically to do soil borings to study the condition of the soil before we decide where to route a highway. Right now, state law gives us authority to go on property to do land surveys and to do surveys to determine if environmental remediation will be needed on land that we may buy for highways. But it doesn't allow us to go on to do soil borings, and so that's the purpose for this provision. This language does provide that we must give the owner notice, and if the owner refuses, we must get a court order, and we must compensate the owner for any damage that we do. Section 3 of the bill affects inspection of bridges, specifically culverts, and provides that for culverts that are in good condition, the commissioner may authorize those inspections to be done at four-year intervals. And that would be a change that is supported by federal law and regulation governing the state management of bridges. It also requires us to keep records. Section 4 addresses the Minnesota Rail Service Improvement Program, and it makes some housekeeping changes in the language and clarifies that the funds which are obtained from the sale of bonds specifically for that purpose may be used to pay a portion of the cost of rehabilitation projects designed to improve rail service of a rail user, which is a shipper, or a rail carrier, which would be the railroad. And so it clarifies that in the law and basically broadens the purpose of the rail rehabilitation project. And that is language at the last two lines on page 4. And then over on page 5, section 5, this is at 5.13, provides that the commissioner may lease any line or right-of-way held in the state rail bank, which is land held by the state for future transportation or utility or rail purposes. Right now, the law allows us to sell or lease that land as long as we keep a 50-foot corridor. The change in this is contained at page 5, line 32. It requires the department to retain at least a 100-foot corridor, which seemed to us to be a good idea since we're not sure what purposes these corridors may be used for in the future. There's increased interest in possibly retaining them for rail or other transportation purposes. And then section 6, beginning at line 6.17, creates a statute related to the use of rail bank property that is just like a statute we have for highways now that says that it prohibits certain actions on rail bank property just as it does now on highways, prohibits obstructing the trail, depositing garbage, obstructing ditches, destroying fences, signs, or right-of-way markers, and provides that doing any of those things is a misdemeanor. The same is for that kind of activity on a highway. And that's basically the bill.
Question. How have you been going in and boring, test boring on people's property before? Don't they come out with a shotgun and ask you what you're doing? Or?
Mr. Chairman, are you asking why we need this language?
Well, I understand why you need it, but I mean, what you must have been doing this, and haven't they been protesting and asking the sheriff to throw you off and stuff, or what?
And Mr. Chairman, I don't know if anyone has actually asked the sheriff to throw us off. I think we have been denied access in one or more cases, and the Attorney General's office has advised us that we do not have authority to go on without the landowner's permission now.
Thank you. Representative Hausman.
Mr. Chair, I just can't resist this question about Section 6. Who inspects the rail corridors to see whether any of this is happening?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman, I'm not aware of anyone actually inspecting the rail corridors for this purpose. I assume we would take action under this section if needed, if someone brought something to our attention or we observed it or
walkways.
Something like that.
Representative Boone?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to applaud Representative Leader and the Department for Subdivision 7 here, expenditures from the Rail Service Improvement Account. I think it's for years they've been good about loaning money to shippers to build unloading or transloading facilities, so on and so forth. but I think it's high time we actually added rail carriers and spelled that out so we can actually step in and help some of our short lines and regionals. So I just want to say kudos for adding that language.
Any other questions or comments? Do you have anything else I'd like to know later?
No, I just renew my motion that House File 735.
Yeah.
Be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus finance bill.
Good. All in favor, aye?
You don't have to vote.
Bill's laid over.
Do I have another bill up or not?
No.
As amended.
As amended, that's right. Do I have another bill up, Mr. Chair, or not?
No.
Okay.
You can take horses. You probably would take less time.
Yeah. Can I do one thing and then get out of
here? Thank you. I got. Yeah. I don't know what I was expecting. That's okay.
Come on.
The next bill up is House File 1920, Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is another bill for I'd like to move to lay over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Transportation Finance Bill.
Representative Hornstein moves House File 1920 to be laid over for a possible inclusion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Okay.
And I know you're looking at me, Mr. Chair and members, and going, not this again. This is my shortest bill of the night, and I will go out on a limb and say I think it'll be the shortest amount of testimony as well. Because I've got Mr. Schreiber with me. But let me just say, the intent of this bill is to have a conversation about some different options for joint powers arrangements with regard to the sales tax that is under consideration for our omnibus bill. So with that, I'll just turn it over to Mr. Schreiber, who it's always a pleasure to work with, and he'll very briefly go through the bill and we'll entertain questions.
Mr. Chairman? Bill Schreiber, representing the Metro Transit Ways Development Board. This bill, House File 1920, which is Representative Hornstein's and companion bill in the Senate, is Senator Dibble. In discussions with both of these authors, they said, let's get as many ideas on the table as it relates to the metro-wide sales tax that we can. So this approach, Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Chair, we didn't move the amendment, the delete all amendment.
Sorry about that.
Sure.
Mr. Chair? I checked the system. Okay. I've got here.
Thank you for that, Mr. Chair. We have a DE1 amendment that is really, it's a delete all. So the bill in its proper form would be the DE1 amendment.
Okay. Representative Hornstein moved the DE1 amendment. Any questions? Not all in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Amendment is moved.
Mr. Chairman, let me discuss, and I was hoping that we would have a full committee so you could have a good discussion on this, but I'll be as brief as I can. One of the distinctions here with the Hornstein bill is that the counties that are going to be administering the sales tax will do it in a very similar way with your Transportation Advisory Board. Rather than allocating a specific percent for transit or a specific percent for highways, the grantees would apply and decisions would be made for both highways and transit. Now, as it relates to highways, we limit this to construction only. No dollars available for right-of-way acquisition or planning or anything like that because there are sources of money to do that. For transit, it runs the full gamut, anywhere from planning and as well as construction, and in the later years after 2012, it would also be available for operating assistance. Our original bill started out with three or more counties, and now we've revised that to say five counties and identify the five counties that have active transitway activities underway. And so that's Anoka and Hennepin, Ramsey, Dakota, and Washington. Now, we also provide that if adjoining counties want to join in, that they can become a part of that Joint Powers Board, and then those counties as well would have the authority to levy that 0.5% sales tax. I think another unique feature of this is that the counties themselves will be bearing all of the administrative costs for this. The goal of our MTDB board is more faster. And that means you want the dollars directed that would be the yield from this sales tax to be directed towards construction and advancing these transitway projects in the region. I think as one looks in an objective fashion at the region, the needs, and the timing, you will probably conclude that in the early years, because it takes so long to get these transit projects underway, that there would be more dollars going towards highways than there would for transit, because you simply can't get the transit projects up fast enough. And then in the later years, there would be much greater dollars going towards transit as transitways as compared to highways, and that's why our board feels that you need the maximum flexibility. And I'll acknowledge when you say 50-50 or 80-20 or something like that, that it looks much better on a spreadsheet because you can point to dollar amounts. But we're suggesting that you not do it that way because of the changing needs that this region is going to experience over the next 10 to 15 years.
Mr. Schreiber, we have a question. Excuse me. Representative Hollis.
Mr. Chair, 324 to 327, just is there a concern that is that partly because the other taxes already imposed put them over a threshold?
That's a language regarding the city of Minneapolis.
Right.
That's my understanding, that they have a limit on the amount of tax in the city of Minneapolis, and if you didn't put this language in, then there'd have to be a reduction on that lodging tax within the city.
And then, Mr. Chair, I just a comment. I completely appreciate the flexibility because needs change. Of course, I continue to be so frustrated because now we're down to five counties, and I think we just don't acknowledge that there's just no barrier on this these transit corridors, and that somehow it seems that we impose a tax on a small group for the greater good.
Mr. Schreiber.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman, I'm sympathetic to that. I think you're working a delicate balance even in getting all of these counties together. And early on, it says that there can be a weighted voting on the part of the counties. Now, you've probably seen the numbers. Over half the sales taxes generated in the metropolitan area come from Hennepin County. I think it's fair to say that Hennepin County is not going to go into this type of arrangement if they can be outvoted on almost any item by the other counties. So we're saying there's an opportunity here for waiting, but it is not prescriptive because, quite frankly, I don't know how legislator could craft that in a way that all counties would be comfortable. So we think the best way to do it is to simply say you can allow for waiting of votes, and that the counties are going to have to work that out among themselves. Obviously, you can't impose the tax if you aren't a part of the Joint Powers Board, so it's going to force the counties into an agreement. Now, in terms of the adjoining counties, Representative Hausman, I we're hearing a great deal of interest in both highway and transit projects on the collar counties of the seven-county metropolitan area. And I think we're making it as easy as possible for them to join in as a part of this arrangement. And quite frankly, I would hope that they would. You know, we're quite familiar with North Star, and our expectation is that once Sherburne County would join in as a part of this, then you'd see a Benton and Stearns County joining in as well so that the vehicle would be there for extension of North Star commuter rail.
Representative Hausman, further? Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Where does it indicate that other counties can become a part of this? That's one question. The other question is, what about the rural counties, rural Minnesota counties?
Chairman, I'm going to go backwards. As it relates to the rural counties, that's on page 5 of the Delete All Amendment. It's a section 4, and that's the Greater Minnesota Sales Tax. And I think that's language directly out of the Earhart Bill, House File 23, which says they have to identify the project. They can impose the tax. When the project is completed, the tax comes off.
And it does not require, Mr. Chairman, it doesn't require a referendum.
That's correct.
Okay.
And as it relates to the metro counties,
I see section
Matthew.
3, Mr. Chairman, line 311. That's not initially, it'd be any time. That were the...
The initial counties are
yes, beyond that though.
Fine in the metropolitan area, and Matt, you helped draft this. Maybe you can find quickly the location where they can join in.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Burse.
Mr. Chair, members, on page 3, lines 10 to 12, the definition of the transportation area is set up, as Mr. Schreiber mentioned, with the initial counties and an allowance for adjacent counties to also join in. There's also language on page 3, lines 32 to 34, that clarifies that the Joint Powers Board has to allow the adjoining counties to add in as they want to.
Thank you.
Further questions? Representative Mason?
A real quick question. Given the counties that you're dealing with here, and knowing that the growth is in the counties that we're not including, does this mean we're going to allow for backwards growth the way we've been just kind of doing it backwards all along, rather than putting the transportation out there first before the growth?
Mr. Schreiber.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mason, I don't, you know, the focus of our board is on transitways. And in order to have transit ways, you have to have some densities. You have to have some demand for that. And I think we have to acknowledge when you're on in the far out fringe in most locations, unless you have a situation like Elk River and Big Lake, where there is congestion on Highway 10 and there is a rail corridor that is of the highest quality in the state, that you can utilize that existing infrastructure. But in most cases, To go out and construct new infrastructure to serve low-density areas is probably not cost-effective, and instead you're going to want to put those dollars in the highways.
Representative Beard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sitting here looking at the bill and realizing that everybody's talking about the people I represent who aren't in this bill, or as Mr. Schreiber just called them, the far-out fringe out there in Scott and Carter County.
You didn't mean politically.
But I think I do see that should this bill become law, there is a mechanism there in the bottom of page 3, apparently, where we can opt in when the time is right and minds are changed or what have you. Correct?
Yeah, that's exactly correct.
Further questions? Not. Do you have any other testifiers?
No, thank you.
I don't know if we should, this is going to be laid over if we have persons in the audience who want to testify against it, rather.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to make one other point. In our original bill, it is limited to the county board members making the decision on the spending of the grants, the prioritization. We've included some language here to include city officials as well. I think that needs some fixing. Quite frankly, the experience that we've had with the Transportation Advisory Board, or TAB, and that's large, you know, nearly 30 people on it, and it seems big, and yet it seems to work quite effectively, and what you get with a larger size group determining the priorities is a larger metro buy-in, and I think it dissipates any concerns that there might be trading going on and that type of thing. So I think we want to work a little bit more in terms of who is on that board, how they get there, and how large it is.
Okay. If there are no further questions, we'll the bill be laid over for consideration in the Omnibus Transportation Bill. Finance.
Thank you so much for hearing the bill.
Or Representative Hornstein. We have, is Representative Hillstrom? She is. Let me make it over. Got her last one. Welcome to the committee, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would ask that someone would consider...
Chair will move House File 1867. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a consumer service bill. It gives customers applying for or renewing their motor vehicle license, driver's license, or Minnesota identification card, or applying for vehicle certificate of title, the option of paying by credit or debit card. An option generally not generally available right now. To offset the cost of accepting payments by credit or debit cards, which run in the neighborhood of 2 to 2.5%, the fees for these licenses, cards, or certificates will be raised by the amount sufficient to offset the cost. Many people are asking, you know, why don't we just raise the amount of the fee on just those purchases that are being made with credit card? However, credit card companies will not allow the face-to-face or person-to-person transactions for those service fees to be separate or laid out extra. And so, Mr. Chair, I do have Keith Carlson with me from the counties, and I'd like to have him speak to the bill as well.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I am Keith Carlson. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association. And tonight I'm speaking on behalf of the deputy registrars, both private and public. Our organization, the Minnesota Intercounty Association, and the League of Minnesota Cities, who all support this bill. Representative Hillstrom indicated, this is a customer service bill. It gives customers without a computer and without internet access or doing something more complicated than a vehicle license renewal the opportunity to pay by credit or debit card. Just as those who renew their licenses online currently can do. It does increase the cost of the licenses or title transfers to offset the cost of these credit card transactions, and further, all customers will pay for that, but for those individuals who renew their licenses online right now, that is exactly the situation that exists. Whether or not you pay by credit card, you do pay an additional fee of $1.25. All we're doing is bringing that same sort of model to the person-to-person or in face-to-face type transactions. The situation that we're running into, and this has been a subject of a study that was reported on to Representative Hillstrom's committee as well as the Senate Government Operations Committee, is that more and more people are doing their financial transactions by a piece of plastic. They no longer carry a checkbook on them. They no longer have sufficient cash. And with the exception of one operator of a service center, Hennepin County, if they show up at our service counters and pull out a credit card or a debit card, we say, sorry, we can't accept that. And we say, unless you have the sufficient cash or a checkbook on you that will allow you to complete this transaction, you'll have to come back later. Or in some instances, in those facilities where a ATM is available, we may point that individual out to that that terminal and say, you can get the cash there, but of course then they will incur ATM charges, which will be particularly large if the ATM card they have doesn't correspond with the operator of that terminal. So this is both a convenience as well as a potential cost saving to those customers. We simply want to bring the services that we provide to individuals back into the 21st century instead of continuing to operate in the horse and buggy air, because that simply does not exist. I'm sure, as many of the members of the committee frequently run into more and more merchants in the private sector post signs, "We do not accept checks. We will gladly, though, accept your credit or debit card." And consequently, people are changing their habits to correspond to that. But yet, when they come to our facilities, we tell them exactly the opposite. "We'll gladly take your cash or check, but you can't use your credit or debit card." We want to reverse that situation and take care of our customers as efficiently as possible.
Thank you. Any questions of the testifier? If not, Representative Hillstrom, this came through your Government Affairs Committee?
Representative Leader, Mr. Chair and members, we did hear the report that was done by a task force about this credit card situation. The problem is the task force did not agree on a solution. And so I am carrying this bill in an attempt to bring people together, at least, to maybe allow this use of credit cards and have people come to the table to talk about it.
Thank you, for Mr. Carlson, for your testimony. Apparently no question, but I think we should call the department, probably.
Correct.
Excuse me, Representative Beard.
Mr. Chair, while the testifier is coming, I think when Chair Hillstrom heard this bill in her committee, it reminded me that it was a study that was ordered a year or two ago, because there were other sections of government that were also asking for the ability for credit card transactions, whether it was marriage licenses or fishing licenses or what have you. All of them, I think, run, if I'm not mistaken, Chair Hillstrom, all of them run into the same problem where the state can't account for the discount that you have to pay a credit card company for the transaction. This, I believe, applies only to motor license vehicles or motor vehicle licenses and things like that that a deputy registrar handles. I think it's a great start in the right direction, in my opinion. So it doesn't put the whole state under this, but it gives us an ability to maybe take some baby steps with this section of state business transaction with the general public and run with it for a while and see if this actually is a way that can work.
Thank you, Representative Beard. Thank you, Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Pat McCormick with Driver and Vehicle Services, and the department opposes the bill in its current form. There are several issues that are problematic for us. One is that the way that it is drafted, the administrative burden on the department would be significant because the fees would all come to us, and then we'd have to send the filing fee back to the deputy registrars. There would be significant accounting changes that would need to be made to our information systems, and we do have some concern that this type of approach, where we're adding a fee to all transactions, is problematic. We hear now from very many customers that use our online tab renewal system of their concerns that we're charging a handling fee of $1.25. The other concerns we have is that the fees would be raised in this bill on every transaction, so someone that comes in and does multiple transactions would be, in essence, paying three customer service charges versus one. Some of these are really the problems with the credit card industry, as Mr. Carlson spoke of before, and I think we're all in agreement in that respect. MasterCard is offering a pilot to all motor vehicle agencies where if we offer credit cards through them, they will allow us to have the customer add the convenience fee to the transaction, but you'd have to set up a separate line for just MasterCard customers. And as most of you probably know, Visa is more the card of choice than MasterCard. Our hope had been that now that Visa had become a public company, there may be some leverage that would have them agree that government is different than merchants, and the fact that people are paying taxes in our case And so as a result, it should be an option for customers to determine, but that is not the case. And so those are some of the questions and concerns we've raised with our deputies and with the counties and our driver license agents. But we have agreed to meet on Friday and talk through some of these issues to see if there's a way that we may be able to find a workable solution. And so we appreciate the fact that you're listening to all the testimony, and we will take a look at whether or not there's a different way to craft a solution to this problem.
Representative Hausman.
And Mr. Chair, mine is just a comment rather than a question. I wish there were a way around this for people who pay cash to have to pay for the privilege of other people having the convenience of using a credit card, and to impose that expense on them because we have to apply the fee across everyone. Strikes me as somewhat unfair to those who still live in a cash world, particularly if you assume they might be more often seniors or those who are poor. We potentially have a issue here where we're charging one group of people for the privilege of another group having convenience.
Comment, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I agree. this is an attempt to make this convenient for everyone. I just attempted to get a passport a few months ago, and went to Hennepin County, didn't know they took credit cards, so I went to the cash machine, thought I got enough cash, waited 45 minutes in line, finally got up to the counter, and they said I was $6 and some cents short. And so had they not taken credit cards, I would have, either had to go to the end of the line or whatever. But they did take credit cards. The way they pay for it in Hennepin County is they're a big enough county that they can sell advertisement right within the facility. And so they have these big TVs and advertisement scrolls through there. So what's happening is big counties like Hennepin, you have customers who have different rights than those who live in outstate Minnesota. And I think that checks are becoming less and less popular. People just aren't carrying them because merchants aren't taking them. And so I would like to have another option for consumers rather than just paying cash.
Any further questions? Representative Hillstrom, just enlighten me how we should progress this bill.
Mr. Chair, I would like that you'd lay it over for possible inclusion in your omnibus bill. And these people can continue to work on it as we move forward, and maybe it can be fixed in conference if it makes it in your bill.
Yeah, apparently you're going to meet on Friday.
Yes.
And I haven't announced or anything, but it's our intent to move an omnibus finance bill as soon as we can, and that's part of the problem. So
yeah,
I think you're aware of that. So we'll see what happens.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Any further questions? If not, thank you very much. House Files 1867 will be laid over for possible consideration in the finance bill. We have one last bill, and Representative Beard says he's going to take care of that quickly. Representative Beard.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'd be happy to move House File 1940. Mr. Chair, I'd be delighted if it went straight to the General Register, but because it has a task force, should it go to state government or something like that, or what do you think?
Let's see. That's got an advisory task force. I may just defer. Representative Hausman, this has got a task force, again, at one of those study groups that actually doesn't quite fit in with the quarter studies type.
I think the question would be whether it would have to go to governmental operations. That would be the question I would have.
Yeah. That's what I'm trying to wonder, Representative Beard.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Wright.
Made it through almost all the committee without...
without Jeremy.
Without speaking up, but just as a member of government operations, and we've been making it a regular policy to see as many of these task force bills as we can. So I think, and we've been really quick, and
straightforward, although I will warn Representative Boyd that there are a couple of boisterous members of his caucus that are there that he might want to speak with before he comes before us. But I'm sure that Representative Pulaski would be happy to see the bill, and we can send it back here if you'd like, or to the register, or whatever.
Thank you. Is that Representative Pulaski's or Representative Hillstrom?
It's Representative Pulaski's, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Well, Representative Beard, did that be your wish?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, that'll be my motion, and we'll recommend it to pass. And as amending, because I do have a brief offer, author's oral amendment.
Okay.
And oral amendment. We'll send it to Government Operations. Members, on page 2 of the bill, line 2.7, concerning the task force, might as well make the amendment here and have it engrossed for right. The next committee. On line 2.7, the Department of Transportation Aeronautics Office, I'd like to add this line: a person appointed by the commissioner from the Department of Transportation Aeronautics Office.
Is that in addition to the language that's there?
Correct. That would be an additional line. And members, that's a courtesy by request from the commissioner's office at DOT, that rather than have the chair of the task force just select someone from aeronautics, they wanted the privilege, since it's their department and their employee, of selecting who that would be, and I'm fine with that.
Could you repeat that again?
Certainly. The language I'm asking to have added, Mr. Burris, a person appointed by the commissioner from the Department of Transportation Aeronautics Office. Actually, Mr. Burris, that could probably be worded a little more smoothly. From the Aeronautics Office of the Department of Transportation.
Mr. Burris, you have that event?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, I'm not clear on whether this would be an additional member of the task force, or if this amendment is intended to clarify that first member is appointed by the department.
Correct. It's not an additional member. It's just to clarify that the Commissioner of Transportation gets to appoint that person.
Okay, we can incorporate that in there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, for a couple of years, we've had an aviation subcommittee that's looked at the affairs of the 134 public use airports in the state of Minnesota. Those airports are largely overseen by the Department of Aeronautics within MnDOT. We have three streams of funding that go towards aeronautics. There's the aircraft fuel tax, the aircraft registration fees, and the flight line property tax. These are applied in different ways. There's funding formulas that dictate how heavy the registration fee is, how much the fuel tax is, and how the airline flight property tax is administered to the air carriers that fly in and out of the state. There's been some anecdotal talk over the last couple of years that perhaps lowering the registration fees on aircraft in the state of Minnesota, which on corporate and private aircraft are some of the most onerous and extensive registration fees in the country. There's been anecdotal talk that perhaps this is chasing planes out of here. Planes can be based anywhere because they're fast, they fly long distances, and there are people actually that have their companies domiciled in Minnesota that quite possibly are basing their planes elsewhere because of the registration fees. Meanwhile, our fuel tax is among the lowest in the country. And before we just start monkeying around with reconfiguring revenue streams to the Department of Minnesota, we thought we'd step back and have a task force and hire a consultant that actually will acquire real data. Instead of just anecdotal evidence, we're going to acquire real data regarding your aircraft registrations, the fees, the fuel taxes, and the formulas in which we can move them one way or the other without impeding or disincentivizing aviation business in this state, and actually perhaps encouraging some of the corporate and business airplanes to come home and be based here so our people can work on them, fly them, staff them, and so on and so forth. This applies, again, only to revenue accruing to the statewide airport fund that the Department of Aeronautics administers. This does not apply, to be very clear, it does not apply to the 7 airports that the Metropolitan Airport Commission controls and operates, nor to the funding stream that the Metropolitan Airport Commission has. This is about the statewide airport fund administered by the Department of Aeronautics. And after we've had a couple of stakeholder meetings that Representative Leader and I hosted, the language you see before you, composing the task force and its scope and its report, is pretty much embodied in this bill. So I'd ask for your adoption and move it along to the next committee, and we'll see if we can't get this task force underway. One thing I might add, Mr. Chair, is the Legislative Coordinating Commission, the Speaker of the House has given permission to work with under the auspices of the LCC. They actually have policies and procedures in place for administering the funds that we'll acquire from the airport airport fund in the Department of Aeronautics. There's sufficient money in that fund to be spent on this purpose. And they also have the procedures in place for procuring, if we need, the purpose, services of a consultant. That was an issue that, remember, we had. So all that can be accomplished through the LCC, and we've spoken with them, and they can make that work for us.
Representative Beard, I have two questions, and I know you have another testifier who wants to testify, but as I understand it, there would be no money involved in setting up the task force, technically. So, I just want, if I may, just have a moment. Representative, or not, Mr. Grass. Representative Beard, because of the fact that there's no money involved, we probably could incorporate in our omnibus finance bill if there's an urgency. I think there's, in a sense, is there an urgency to get this task force established or not? Or,
Mr. Chairman, yes.
Yeah? Oh, maybe. I'm getting different.
Okay. There is some urgency that we move on it this year, and I believe, actually, the $200,000 appropriated from the airport fund, that makes it a finance bill, doesn't it?
That makes it a funding bill.
Yeah, so there is some funding and an appropriation in the bill. There is money attached. It's not our intent that there'll be per diems or anything like that to the members of the committee, but there may be some expert outside help we have to hire, and that's what the money's for.
And perhaps, too, because the bill came from finance, we have to send it back to finance with a recommendation to go to the other committees, what it would be.
Okay.
So if that would be your motion, we have a quorum. We can vote. We actually had a quorum.
Don't look around.
It's going to be a tough bill to pass.
I do have one testifier that would like to speak about the bill.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Gordon Hoff. I'm with the Minnesota Business Aviation Association. I simply want to say this evening that we do support this bill and look forward to working to be of assistance as it moves forward.
Thank you, Mr. Hall. Any questions from the committee members that are here? See. If not, Representative Beard renews his motion that House File 1940, as amended, be re-referred to finance with the recommendation that it be referred to, was that Government Op? Is that the committee that he said? Government Operations Committee?
The Government Operations.
Okay, that's your motion, Representative Beard.
It is.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? No. The motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And your bill is on its way.
Good deal.
That's the end of the thank you, members that stayed here. And watch your emails, because we may have to, we've got some committee times, or not committee time, but we've got a room scheduled. It's our anticipation to be working on the full bill, so watch your emails to see what the schedule is. Again, thank you. The meeting is adjourned.